Welcome to Starfleet Universe Encore. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SAP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us, we have talk guests every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions, the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com. Search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you need to reach me by Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My personal account is Paul Franz. So to find me there, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. The podcast Twitter account is sfuoncall, sfuoncall. That's where I will announce this podcast. And of course, I have a tertiary account for my business called Franz Games, where I announce news about my business and also different client updates. And of course, this lovely podcast, Talkcast, gets turned to podcast and available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ABB this week. We've got Steve Cole working on Capsule number 53, some fiction, different blogs, and of course the artwork for Gorn Master Starship book and Shapeways, of course. Steve Petrick was busy working on SAB updates and also the Zinni and Gorn Master Starship books. Gene Sexton was busy managing Facebook, answering questions there, and also managing the Rangers, the spam assault on BBS, knocking them out, and of course dealing with customers and doing other marketing things that are quite important to keep the company going and visible to those who don't think ADB is still alive, which I know you who are listening to this podcast do know they're alive and well. Moving on to SAP Online tournaments, we have the Masters Touring 18 tournament run by Andrew Calk. There are three games completed. There's actually a fourth that's on to turn seven. They're going to be working, they're going to be playing some more on Monday. I plan on playing my game on tomorrow night. I was going to say Friday. Well, that's tomorrow night. I'm not sure when, I'm not exactly sure when we will meet. I told them that we can start at 6 o'clock. Anytime afterwards, that is fine with me. When it comes to the Rat 48 tournament, run by Ron Brunmeyer, there are 16 signups so far. We have until Monday, so if you have not signed up, sign up now. Otherwise, we're going to have a very small tournament. When it comes to the Platinum Hat tournament, we're still waiting for Ted and Peter to face off. Ted's been very busy with real life issues, i.e. his job. You know, that little nasty little thing you have to have to put food on the table. You know, we understand, Ted, just you're changing jobs next month, and hopefully that will help, though invariably it hurts at the beginning because they don't want you to take any time off, maybe put some extra time in and so forth. I say been there, done that, but I haven't. Never had a work expect that much from me. Moving on to, of course, the library report for this week. There actually has been some progress. I have put my money where my mouth is and actually gotten I have completed all of the ground bases, all the small ground bases and the one large ground base. I still got to do one module, a hangar module, and the other one is a mobile base. Those two I still have to get done. I've actually put in a query to the rest of the group saying, okay, where are the background images for these? So I got that done. So we're all the way up to 2,426 complete conversions, only 906 yet to be converted. That gives us a percent complete of 72.8. Yes, it's only like a 0.3% increase from last week, but every little point counts because they all add up. So that's good to see that is some progress. You know, obviously part of that was me, but I'm not tooting my own horn. I should have gotten mine done way long ago before this time. And with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got me. And, of course, the wonderful and star-filled chat room. Well, Dave and Ross are the regulars to come in. Now, Lord knows, we need every single person to show up in the chat room and join us. Now, I know that the hard part is if you have a tablet or a smartphone that you can't, you can come to the chat room, but you can't listen at the same time, which makes it really difficult. Actually, you kind of can if you call in and then join the chat room on the in the browser. That's about as best we can do at the moment. Maybe, hopefully, sometime in the future, we can actually have it so that we can do streaming, possibly even through Discord or something along those lines. But until that time actually occurs, we're still here and talks you. It solves a lot of problems, and we're pretty happy with it. Just a reminder, next week there will be no podcast. Sorry, but I have family responsibilities, and as I explained last week, I just can't do it. Short of moving the podcast to be earlier in the day, which in theory I could do, but I don't think it's really necessary. I think missing one day is not, and plus I'm gonna be having a very busy week, so we will not have a podcast next week because I have to have some real life issues, i.e. pick up my sister-in-law at Harrisburg Airport around midnight. So what I'll probably be doing is getting off work, take a nap, getting certain things done around the house, final preparation for her to show up, and then go pick her up, leaving here around 10:30, maybe a little bit earlier than that. Dave, sir, I'm sorry if you'll have a withdrawal. If you need me to, I'll record something for you so you can listen to it and to soothe your mind and soothe your soul. But in the meantime, we have this podcast to get through, this podcast to hopefully discuss interesting topics that I know I'm going to be interested in. Questions, will you be interested? Hopefully, because you're listening, that you're interested in what I'm interested in. And there are many topics, obviously, that we could do. Now, there's two topics I have for this evening. I'm going to first start with the first one, which I came up with the idea mainly because of what was going on this past weekend. That I spent a little bit of time, maybe an hour or so. I think it was like an hour. Playing this game, which actually is kind of a neat game. It's a roguelike game called Duskers. And the whole idea of Duskers is that you have this... you have two things. You have one, you have a command line interface which tells these little drones, i.e. robots, how to go through these derelict ships. The idea is you go into these derelict ships, you grab anything that's been left behind in these derelict ships. You know, in some cases, you might run into like aliens and try to avoid those. Attack robots, which I ran into and I killed a couple of my drones, which sucked. But that wasn't the main thing. I thought it was kind of interesting. I'm probably going to restart my game because of I got two things that got killed, and I learned from the first time, which is okay. Don't pry open a door if you can avoid it. Pry open a door only if you need to, because of if you pry it open and there's something bad behind it. In this case, it's like an attack robot. You won't survive. There's no way to shut the door. You can run to the next room, but he's just going to follow you and kill you. So it's like, okay, don't do that. Tip number one. But you know, like most games, the idea is that you restart and you try again. Now, from that, what I got from my own personal benefit was the whole idea of two things mainly. One which I've discussed before many years ago now. I know I discussed about this because of that is the whole idea of when it comes to the online client itself to have less of a point and click interface and more of a tappy-tappy, i.e. keyboard-oriented interface. Now, the main reason back then when I originally discussed this many years ago was that I was having problems with my wrists. And with that, what I did is I bought, I forget what it was, Dragon. Well, the Dragon software that would allow it to interpret my voice and write out text to the screen. And it was like, great, you know, speech to text. Let's get this right. Now, so that I can, the whole idea was that I could play SFB using the online client using just my voice. And I think that would be so cool. Anyway, and I thought of some ideas. I looked back and I thought I'd implement some of the stuff, but I actually had not. Now, I think I'm going to move forward with some of that. At the very least, what it can help me do is to move for the next part, which is more of an automated ship. Now, let's start with the command line, which is, that was one thing that you could control these drones in Duskers. You can say, well, navigate this drone to this location. And I mean, at that point, your hands, it was hands off, and the computer would take over and do the movement, which I think is really quite awesome. Obviously, for SFB itself, it was playing Starfleet Battles. Not a variant, not even Federation Commander. I'm thinking about it. If you're not even, you can do the same thing with Federation Commander you can with Starfleet Battles, but the one thing that I'm thinking of is of a new game, you know, the one I call SFU Ships, which is a very boiled down to the basics, the true core of SFB, some of the functionality, i.e., you know, the whole idea of segmented movement, you know, proportional movement is what I call it, because of unlike things like, what's the Baron Pretzels game I was thinking of? It's been so long, darn it. Silent Death, that's it, Silent Death. But where basically you have a certain number of movement points, and then each ship, you roll for initiative, and then you move a certain number of movement. Use your new movement points to move your ship, which will allow you to turn, depending upon the number of movement points that you get. No, but that's part of what core makes up Starfleet Battles. Another one, obviously, is shield. And of course, in addition to shields, we have different kinds of weapons. And one part of those weapons is plasmas and drones. Okay, if you want to boil it down to the basics. Now, obviously, the whole idea of drones and plasma are seeking weapons, those can be done, and can be done probably pretty quickly for automated movement. But the only question in that case was going to be that, you know, handling that, those kind of, you know, how many drones do you give, how fast are the drones and the plasma, depending upon, compared upon the ship. As I've originally mentioned with SFU ships, one thing I was thinking about, which is tone it down, instead of having 32 impulses, maybe have, I was thinking about 6. But I think number of impulses is 8 with the ships. Having a max speed of ships have a max speed of 6. Let's just try to make this clear. But okay. Back to the basically the keyboard interface. Some of it could actually be done relatively quickly, relatively easily through the client, you know, because of the whole idea, and this is not just, the thing is, the great thing about Slack has the same concept as what I'm talking about, which is Slack actually steals the idea from IRC. And what is what the back end for the SFU client is, SFU client back end is basically the IRC server, is what it is. It's a specialized IRC server, which works quite well. Though, still has some glitches. This is from the original transition over to a server-based room from a client-based room. That one, I still have to work out that issue, which is when you undo a movement. Oh, hey, Randy, how you doing? But anyhow, you know, the whole idea of slash commands, in the case of the SFU client, obviously we'd have certain slash commands, like, for example, slash move to move any selected ships. Now, that could be, obviously the selection can be done easily by either the mouse initially and do it that way, or you know, you can have like select group, and so you can actually specify a predefined group which you've already defined like in the game control window, which I think, you know, that's one of those things I really need to create a screencast for, because of it's one of those power features which has been around forever, but I don't think anyone's really grasped the whole idea of selection groups. Okay, and for those people who don't know what selection groups are, and I'm sure you guys, most people don't, even if they've actually been used in clients for like 5 years or more. And that is, if you go to the game control when it comes to SFB, you go to the top, you notice there's like F1, F2, F3, F4. Those are called selection groups. The whole idea is that you can, there's a little checkbox saying set. So what you do is you select your units, make sure you have that box checked, and then you click one of the buttons. And then you unclick the set button, the checkbox. And what that will allow you to do is at any point in time that you want those units to be selected, you'll select those units. Now, this can be makes things quite a lot easier in my mind when it comes to moving a group of drones or a group of plasma or a group of fighters. In some cases, groups of ships, because invariably a lot you have ships that move as a fleet, as a group all together. Right, I'm not sure what your question is when it comes to what language. If you could clarify that, I'd be happy to answer your question. In the meantime, I'll move forward. So that will allow, you know, those groups allow you to quickly you click the button or press like F1, F2, F3, F4. The idea is you actually hit on the function keys to activate that selection, and then at that point you can move. So the idea of the command line in that case would be that you say like slash select group and then space, and you say like F1 or F2. I'm not sure whether I'd say have you type in like at the actual F, or just say select group 1, select group 2, select group 3, things like that. But of course, my guess would be at some point someone might want to use, like, I'm programming in Java is the language. And for that, I can easily see people wanting to say, okay, I want to create an alias for that group. So group number one no longer is group number one. It's ships. Like, so that you can say Slack group ships. And our Slack slash select group, you know, group one or group two or D group one or D, you know, whatever. So that could actually allow you to select a group, of, you know, that'd be a selected group terms. Make it just a little bit easier to remember when it comes to, you know, so that you, so you'd have, you know, your alias. So you can set up aliases, which I think I can see people wanting to do that. Obviously, that would be secondary, you know, to the first one, the first functionality. But after you, you know, after you do a, you can do a, like, have said like slash select, and you can give it a unit name, and then this would automatically do that. Now, obviously, if you, what I would think is slash select and give it a unit name, it would just select that one. But if you want to add on to it, you have to add a command like, oh, slash select, like dash add, and then space the name of the unit. Or you want to delete, say slash select dash delete, and it'll, or remove, probably remove, space the unit name, in case you would, it would know that you want to add or subtract from an actual selection, a group selection, because of currently you can actually either in the group command, the game control window, you can actually highlight those units by hand, you know, using either control when it comes to Windows, or when it comes to Mac, you hold down the command key, and that allows you to do multiple selection, which is, I think, really cool. And, you know, move would be relatively basic, you know, i.e. move, and you say, or probably move, turn left, slash move, turn right, or slash move left or slash move right, you know, something along those lines would probably move. Probably a move to, for if you want to, actually move to would be really useful for Andromedans, I would think. Because what that a move to could do is actually move, you know, take a selected unit and move it to a explicit hex location, because invariably when you do a displacement, you have to specify what location you're actually going to be displacing to. So that would be a good thing. So, you know, this is the kind of command language that I think would be great to build up for the command line of the chat room. Not chat room, but of the chat area. So you can work on the online client relatively quickly. Especially if you're an excellent typist, this is the kind of thing that you want to do. Now, you know, so that's the beginning. Obviously, you can do other things like say slash fire, and you say slash fire, it will bring up like the fire dialog. You would say slash activity, it can bring up, you know, the activity window, things like that. Or you could even have it so it automates the actual selection of activity to a certain degree. Because I'm thinking about, okay, you do a slash activity, and then you denote like the impulse segment that you want to select. So it could select that. And then additional things could be added on to that, you know, when it comes to, depends upon what segment. Like you can select the the weapons that you want to choose and the targets for those weapons. Now, that becomes a little more difficult when it comes to the command line. And in that case, what we're getting into when we get to that point, because, you know, slash move, you know, some of the basics, slash move, slash fire, slash activity. Now, those are relatively simple commands that you can do, and so we're going to have the client do those things, which I think would be actually kind of cool, because then people can more quickly operate their ships. Now, again, I'm not sure if we want to add like aliases for ships themselves, obviously you can add an alias, you can remove an alias. So, those things I think are good beginning blocks to start with. But one of the things that I know I've discussed before about it, which is because I was always fascinated by this one product, which I played with for a little bit, and then dummy me, I throw it out. And to this day, I am just, I'm kicking myself for it, which is a game called Omega. When Omega is you basically get a tank, an automated tank. And in that automated tank, you got a programmed tank and to fight another tank. It's like a concept of Core Wars, but with tanks, which I think is an awesome idea. Now, I'm not sure we want to go that far because of part of what makes SFB fun is actually being able to move the pieces and make all those decisions and not being caught up, with like, you lost your game because of a programming error. In which case, I like the idea of programming the ships and having, because that thing, that's something actually with like Omega, that actually is kind of cool in that if you want a single player game, I think that could do quite nicely. But the question is obviously that would we want to do that for SFB or an SFB variant, as I mentioned? Possibly. Obviously, the first thing we'd want to do to see if anyone would be interested in that is to create the basics for that game, i.e., break it apart and then, or maybe just add it to SFB itself. Which is allow some automation of play itself. For example, I know one of the things that people have been asking for a bit, and I have to double check. I'm pretty sure who was it? Somebody sat down and actually took movement rules that were created by, I think, Jim Hart, ported it to Java, and we actually have a library we have seeking weapon movement now, and which is, of course, there's two ways of doing seeking weapon movement. One is you want a target to lead the target, or do you want to trail the target? That's always been that's when it comes to SFB play and FedCom play. That's always been the question, because if you want to trail a target, the whole idea of trailing a target is make sure the target doesn't come back. You're just trying to chase them away, possibly just control, have it so that he will not turn back. Which, of course, is the whole idea of seeking weapons themselves. Seeking weapons themselves are designed for two purposes. One, in the hope that you destroy your enemy. the hope, destroy your enemy. Because anyone who's played Zinni or Gorn or Ryman or anything that has seeking weapons, I mean real seeking weapons, I'm not talking about suicide shuttles. Well, in some cases you can do suicide shuttles, but it's rare that you have a knife fight where you have to worry about a suicide shuttle. And that is, you do it for two reasons. One, you do it for controlling movement, because of when it comes to drones, obviously you have to have enough drones to make it worth his while to not shoot him down and run away, or either run away or ED and launch a weasel. And the other one is to actually hopefully damage the ship. Now, the toughest part about having a seeking weapon actually land on a ship is landing on the ship. I.e., either you have to overwhelm his defenses, or you have definitely overwhelm his defenses. But how do you get to that point? One, you have to make sure that you pin the target down so he can't move, i.e. he can't run away. And obviously, if you're playing a tournament battle, you're fighting in a fishbowl. Yay! And and I'm sure you understand what that means, which is basically, unlike some game, some scenarios in SFB, in a tournament, you cannot exit the map. Actually, if you try to exit the map, you will hit the barrier. It was called the tournament barrier. You will stop immediately. Now, here's the crazy thing about that little barrier. People use that barrier as a system, as an active system. And the way they use it for an ED without doing an ED. I.e., you can actually stop the ship. You'll take 5 points of damage on that facing shield. And in the case of... I have to look up the rule. Because I know that hitting the wall can also break a tractor beam. Now, I forget exactly the conditions of that, because I'm pretty sure that you would actually have to push your opponent into the wall if he tractored you to break the tractor, i.e. you can't run into the wall yourself to break a tractor that another opponent has placed upon you. So, but the, that's the great, that's one of those things with the fishbowl, and that gives the plasma players not a leg up, but definitely makes it so that they have a fighting chance to actually hit an opponent with the plasma, and of course, force people with plasma, your opponents, to use their wild weasels, when you can actually pin the target, either in the corner or along the side, as long as the plasma, which is pretty much the fastest thing on the board, because it's speed 32 and the ship's only can move speed 31. Even moving speed 31 can't always avoid being hit by a seeking weapon. Now, so one of the automated things that we can do, things that we can add automation for, is obviously drones. Now, the one thing that was part of, the one thing I thought about the whole automating drone movement was obviously, actually not, it might not be obvious, so I'll state it, which is timing. What basically, it has to be kind of almost a manual process to say, okay, tell the client time to move all automated drones. Now, the one thing that is a difficulty with it, the only difficulty with automated seeking weapons is there's only one glitch, which you might not be able to, well, you can do automated movement to a certain degree. And that is drone against drone, or even plasma against drone, where basically, we're at the very end of the movement segment, that's when all the seeking weapons get to move. Problem. If all the seeking weapons move at the same time and you have a seeking weapon targeting another seeking weapon, you have to wait for that seeking weapon to move first before you actually can move. Otherwise, you might make an illegal movement. So, which of course, if you think about it, when it comes to metagaming, then you've given up. If you actually wait, then you have the issue that at that point, your opponent knows that that drone or that plasma is going after another seeking weapon. Not which one, won't know, can possibly guess just from the trajectory of that plasma or drone on the other drone. So, you know, that's one of the things you have to, it's a minor glitch that you have to keep an eye out for. But originally, when I was thinking about that, I was just thinking about, okay, you have a dialogue. You should just click, say, hey, move, you know, move the drones, and it'll move the drones. Or at the very least, I was thinking about popping up a window which says, okay, here's all your seeking weapons, here's the estimated path where it will be going, you know, whether it be turning or whatever, you know, turning, goes straight, sides up, all that kind of thing, and it would actually do that. Now, I've the one thing to keep in mind is that even drones have side slip modes, so you get, that's one thing that would have to be tracked by the computer itself. Okay, what else can we automate in the client to ease the burden of people? Obviously, as I mentioned, you know, the whole idea of selection groups, if you can help move ships quickly and possibly even, you know, doing this command line stuff could actually help speed up play. So then you don't have to press, you know, that's one of the things I don't think, if you have it set up with the keys and you use keys for movement, i.e. like the hold down for Mac, you'd actually have to hold down the command key and then you can use the numbers on the numeric keypad. 7 turning left, 9 turning right, 8 going straight ahead. 2, you know, heading back. And things like, you know, 4 side slipping left, 6 side slipping right. You know, so in that case, it makes it quite simple. Now, with a command line interface, that's one thing we actually could do is, I was almost going to consider calling a macro. I'd say starting off, I would call it let's call it a macro. It'd be a dumb macro, but a macro, i.e. that a macro would actually execute a set of commands. And that would be a new command that is registered. Now, obviously, one thing to keep in mind is that command, you have to make sure that the alias command, the command that you're creating the macro that you're creating from this does not override one of the base commands, you know, like slash fire. If you make a macro called fire and that fire does something else, then um then you'd run into an issue until you actually deleted that macro. But that can actually, you know, having command line macros like that could be a great benefit, because of then a single macro, you could just say, okay, slash DL, which might mean drones left, you know, slash DR, drones right. Things like that, where you have this set of commands where, okay, in the case of, let's say, that's the DL command, that DL macro that I just created. The DL macro command can then, what it could do, it could make sure it selects that the drone group. You know, first command would be slash select group D1. Or select group 1. Whatever. And then slash move left. That would be what the macro did. And possibly, you know, add into the macro the ability to take parameters, in which case that could be substituted within those different commands that would be executed as part of the macro. So, you know, it doesn't give you programmability per se, you know, i.e. Add conditionals and looping. Well, conditionals is the number one thing. Into what a person could do. But it could automate and help speed up play itself. You know, for example, you could do like slash DAC. Or do slash internals, however you want. I'm thinking slash DAC at the moment. And then give a unit name, space, the number of internals. You know, number of internals that need to be rolled. You know, instead of having to... the big issue there is you'd actually have to specify the reinforcement, because... The client automatically starts the damage allocation procedure if it notices that you have internals that you specified on the reinforcement window. It'll automatically do that for you. So in that case, what you'd have to do would be, it has to be an interface where it says, okay, here's the amount of reinforcement I do for each of the shields. And let it kind of automate that dialogue, that window. So you can just say slash, like 5/0/0/0, you know, all the slash zeros to represent each of the shields, how much reinforcement you're going to be placing upon each of the shields. Slash DAC would be the unit name, and then the reinforcement. And that would automatically calculate how many internals you have and start allocating those internals, in which case it could be completely automated and you'd never have to actually be prompted for anything. But obviously, there are certain cases, i.e. selection of what weapon gets destroyed, or in some cases, I mean, hit any hull hit, you could actually be hitting either aft hull or forward hull. So... in that case, you know, you would actually be prompted to what you actually want to take damage on. So I think that kind of thing could help speed up play, and I think definitely could make it more enjoyable, at least for me it would. And we want to move forward to more of a automated play, i.e. a game where that's all you did, possibly. But at the moment, I don't think we're ready to go that far, especially considering that there's certain... I want to really reach my goals. Yes, it's coming up on... June's tomorrow. And there are certain goals I set out for myself for this year. And I, completing the conversions, we're close. We're getting there. We're up to almost 73% completed. One thing I really want, I need to check with, I think it's Jason, and check to see what the list is, how it breaks down, what of the ships that we have, what needs to be converted, what needs to be converted, what can be converted. Because I want it to get to the point where we can't do it anymore without Steve Cole's assistance. That is, in my mind, that's the goal. That's 100% complete for what we can accomplish with what we've got. So we'll just have to wait and see how that all turns out. But as I said, you know, I don't want to take us down too long of a path. Now, another one, obviously, that I want to accomplish, which is the Warlord stuff. And create a, I have to double check, I have to check to see exactly what I wrote for those. I know that's really bad. That's one of the things I should like put up on the wall and remind me, okay, these are the goals for this year. What can I do to work towards those goals? So that would be good. Oh, that reminds me, that's one thing I did not announce on the news portion, which was some work I actually did for SFB Online. For those of you who are SFB Online customers, and if you try to log in on Tuesday, you will notice that you could not. Now, why this happened? I do not know. I wish I did. I have to look into if there's anything I can do to more easily debug that situation where the Java program dies. I'm not sure what killed it, because of I don't see any errors in the logs that specify. All I see is that it was killed. Now, I'm not sure what killed it, whether it was the JVM crashing itself, which I have to look at. I really need to check to see if there was a core dump. If there was a core dump, then, and there might not be a core dump because of, I know for Linux, you have to change it so that it actually, you have to enable core dumps is what you have to do for processes. And I'm not, my guess would be that FreeBSD, which is what I'm running on, probably has the same concept for the JVM. Not just JVM, for any process. Because I would be definitely interested in, if there was a core dump, I would be interested in looking at it. I'd be happy to look at it and see what happened. Was it that it ran out of memory? Was it that some glitch in the actual JVM caused it to die? Is it something along the lines of something? I'm just going to say that there's other options which lead me to great concern. But I'm just to let people know who are right now on, they're listening to my podcast. If you're a customer at SFB Online, one thing I have done is basically I'm not sure if you've been online lately. Probably you have. If you're listening, you probably have. There's a constant presence called test object. And just to let you know, the test object is me. It's my alter ego, is what I call it. Now, this alter ego, I've modified him slightly. Two things I've enabled via some automation scripts. Big surprise. And that is, number one, that if the IRC client, my IRC client that I'm running, that's running the test object, that's what I'm doing. What I've set it up to do is it will notify me immediately when that IRC server went down. Now, it failed, what was it, yesterday. Now, but that was a certain situation. For me, it wasn't that the server went down, it was that I got disconnected. In which case, obviously, if I try to send a notification out, I won't get a notification because my client's been disconnected. Then reconnected and we were all good and go. That's number one. Number two, if you, like Beetlejuice, say my name, say test object, one thing that will occur is that now I will be sent a notification. So that, or if you send me a PM, I will also be sent a notification that you've actually sent me a PM, and actually I will be notified of what that PM message is. So, if you want to grab my attention on something other than obviously the IRC server is down, feel free to PM test object. And that will notify me immediately. And hopefully I will be able to jump on and I will be able to help you as soon as possible. I might not be able to help you. I might be out and about to the degree where I can't log in anywhere. Hopefully I can, but just to let you know that that's a capability now that is available for those who need to get my attention really quickly. So, now I'm going to move forward on to next topic. Next topic actually is, I call it competitive play was the topic for the evening, or one of the topics for the evening. Now, for me, the big thing about competitive play, basically, what competitive play is that as a topic it's about is, one, playing in tournaments, you know, or playing competitively, which invariably means tournaments. But also ways of competing, ways of, you know, competing. Obviously the most simple one is obviously tournament play. Now, there are many different kinds of tournaments that you can play in. Currently, we've got two main kinds that we have normally available on SFB Online. We have the Masters Tournament. We have the Radius Tournament coming up and Platinum Hat. Now, the only difference between Radius and Platinum Hat is the name and the prestige involved. And that's the Platinum Hat is actually supported by ADB itself. But the difference when it comes to those, both when it comes to tournament play, is that they both are single elimination, i.e. you lose, you're out. There are other ones that if you ever played, gone to Origins, that you might have played back in the day. I say back in the day, which is at this point, geez. When's the last time we had that? I forget. This is awful. Because there was a name that was called, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but basically the whole idea was that you have a free-for-all. You'd get matched up with people. You know, you'd be sitting at the desk. Now, that whole to get back to that one, that actually had, there was a big issue right there, which is back in the day, what people would do is people would actually sit there in the waiting area for another game. Now, here's the problem that we ran into, which is I'm sure some of you have already saw, sometimes firsthand, and that is if you have a person waiting by the desk and looking, that means they're waiting for an opponent. Other people will come up and then they'll see who's waiting and go, I'll go play something else for the next hour or two, and I'll come back because of, you know, it's a really tough player. They don't want to play him. So invariably, what we end up doing later on, that's where we realize, you know, this is the bad thing to do, which is they would notify us. They would then go off to wherever they wanted to, and then we'd have their name down on the list for the next opponent. And then, of course, when the opponent came up, the first thing we'd do, we would first make sure that they hadn't already played, because if they already played, it was kind of pointless. That actually was not the case later on in the free-for-all portion of the tournament, because what would happen is that you have a free-for-all portion where you play as many games as possible and the best net kills and the best percentage, I forget, net kills versus number of wins, I think it is. I think that was it. But anyhow, for that, then you at that point, then you start with a single elimination on the next day. Now, this is one of those things that I would love to do online. Here is always the problem. That is, you have to have people dedicated to be available as much as possible online for a couple days. Unfortunately, the way tournament games are currently played, a game could take over a month in real time. You know, because the one thing that SFB Online, you know, and playing online affords is the whole idea of that you can play for an hour or 2 hours. You go, you know, we're done. I gotta get to bed. Pause the game at that point. A week later, pick it up again. Unlike tournaments, you had to get your game done then. You had a 3-hour limit, which I know wasn't always adhered to, but you have the 3-hour limit. You would be forced to play there, and then you could go off and play some other game and come back, but we knew that sometime probably later in that same day you'd be looking for another game. In which case, basically, yeah, that time was completely and utterly dedicated to SFB and playing or FedCom and playing in that tournament, or at least being at that convention. So we could get enough games in like 2 or 3 days. And then we could come up with the single elimination after that point. And then people would play that all out in the player, then obviously the normal single elimination rules take place. You're still limited to three hours. But that's because of we were limited by the number of hours you're going to be there at the convention. So that's why we had I think we set it up for 4 rounds because I think it was the top 16. Yeah, it was the top 16. So we 16, 8, 4, 2, 1, 4 rounds. So that means that given 3 hours for 4 rounds, that's 12 hours. So we started, usually we start at 9 o'clock in the morning. And so that if you played every single game, actually it would be three games would be played on Saturday. And then we'd have the finals played on Sunday for both the single, the gold hat, which is what the Origins game was and got turned into the platinum hat for online. And then the gold hat and also the I forgot what it was. I hate it. The free-for-all. I forget that there was a tournament. And unfortunately, looks like Dave, Russ, and Randy all are not, that have not played in those tournaments or have been in Origins. Because, or they forget or forgetful just like me. But And the one key thing is that you would have to select. If you're in the top, and if you're in the final 16 of the captain's tournament, the gold hat, you would have to choose. Do you want to go with the captains or you want to go for the free-for-all tournament? Which one? You cannot be in both. So, that's why you could actually pop both of them. And that was really great when that occurred. Because one thing we would do actually is on Sunday is we'd actually go and we'd have the finals going on. And while the finals were going on, we'd actually would have our Q&A with ADB. And then we'd have the judge report in on how the games are going, where the games are, and all that. So, you know, that was really cool. Obviously, AV no longer goes to Origins just because financially this makes no sense. But you know, as I say, those were the days. Now the question is, we cannot simulate in online anymore. Actually, we can, but the only way that could actually occur is this. One, it couldn't be SFB. It would have to be possibly this game I call SFU Ships. The whole idea being a very quick turnaround game. A game that you could actually get done in, 30 minutes? Possibly quicker? In that case, you could actually for one day, Or just a week. Let's say a week. People could play as many games as they wanted to. And the people who did the best, we could be like in a final, let's say a final four. And then the final four, you know, you would play that out during, like, on a Saturday. You know, and it would take you what? If a 30-minute game and you had a final four, that means it's two rounds of play. So that means that's like an hour, let's say an hour and a half. So you get people between games, they could actually take a break between those two. And you'd be done, you know, which I think that'd be great. But that, as I said, that'd be one of those things that you'd have to be able to play a lot of games to play against. I was thinking about Warlord doing something with that with Warlord, but I don't think we could do something like that with Warlord because it just doesn't lend itself to that kind of competition. As I mentioned last year, the one thing I wanted to do is actually have an automated play. The whole idea is that people could actually play against the computer, kind of. The whole idea is that you'd have this map of it'd be you against basically NPCs is what it would be, and then you would just compete on scores, how many sites you can actually capture, both major and minor sites, how many ships can you destroy, how many sites can you capture, how big can you grow your economy, and we already have numbers for that, which is the Die Hard has certain calculations that can do to tell you, okay, this is how many points you have, and we probably would use the same mechanism, you know. So hopefully I can do that. I do not plan on having it happen this year, but hopefully in the upcoming years I can do that. I think that'd be quite awesome. And as I said, the one thing I'm pushing towards is things on the web, including the online client, having an online client, which is based on, at least the very least, to start off with, it would be a way of watching the games online without having the client. So, because Java is being slowly deprecated and pushed out the door. And it's getting harder, as I mentioned before, it's getting harder and harder to actually install Java applications on the on computers. And of course, then there's the whole mobile thing, which is, of course, I'm starting to run into that issue, which is there's no mobile app. So people can't play it on their mobile device, and people are buying less and less computers, I mean real computers, and they're buying more Chromebooks and more tablets and more smartphones, to the point where smartphones are becoming people's number one way of interacting. Basically, that's their home computer to a certain degree. I don't think those kind of devices can replace computers. You know, a desktop with a screen and a keyboard. I don't think that actually could occur, because of there's certain interactions. Unless we say, well, we don't want to do that anymore. For example, the whole idea of like a PS4 game where you're doing first person shoot 'em ups. You need a screen. You need a computer of some sort. You know, you're not going to do that completely on a mobile device. Yeah, we have Fortnite, which is kind of a way of doing the whole idea of the first-person shooter to a certain degree. Fortnite is more third-person. You have the character in front of you, and you can see how it all interacts with everybody else, and then you can fight at that point. I played a few games of Fortnite, and I've always, I last for maybe 30 seconds, and then someone kills me. You have to figure out, and then of course what really galls me is that, it's probably because I have to actually spend money. I haven't spent money on it. And that is, invariably, someone shoots me and kills me. So it's like, this, you know, crazy. But hopefully, you know, we can work towards, maybe some smaller games that, you know, can be a little more interactive, more mobile-ish. You know, the whole idea of having so that games can be played quicker, because I think that could actually increase the number of players. If we could actually take Starfleet battles, as I said, boil it down to the basics and create SFU ships and go from there. I think I can probably convince ADB to allow me to do that. I'll just have to wait and see. One thing I want to look into is what's called progressive web apps, and exactly how that works. Because I know there are certain facilities that you can use to make web apps more native-like. It still won't be a native app, but it will be more interactive. And when it comes to certain games, I don't think people care if it looks native or not. Just look at Unity. Look at Unity games. Do they look like native apps? No, they don't. They have their whole own custom UI which you interact with, from the Unity and what's the other one? Because Unity is the one I've done a little programming, which is kind of weird. But anyhow, I think with that, I will wrap up for this evening. And I had a discussion about some ideas for automating and maybe making things a little quicker when it comes to online client using a command line interface, as strange as that might sound. But I think that could actually improve things quite a bit. Obviously, there's still certain ideas that I have from Russ. I had some ideas from Russ that I wrote down, and I'm gonna push forward. You know, one of those things is the grab and drag map. Is one thing I'd like to do. I would love to do a floating map, but I think that's a little more difficult than I really want to deal with. Maybe or maybe not. But anyhow. And of course, we talked a little about competition play, including going back and reminiscing about the good old days at Origins. And with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.